This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Barry Paul Slade,
Stuart Burks,
Roger Munn,
and I'm Finlay Mason. Now, Barry, we have want to know a little bit more about your early teaching career.
I was teaching in the country at Denroa for 13 years. The inspectors called every 3 years, and if you got a good result, you were supposed to use that to apply for further jobs senior. But I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Glenroy School was a typical school, and it had a school house right next door, which helped me to become part of the community. And I was immediately invited to join the bowling club or the table tennis or the indoor bowls and so on. And that's the part that I really got to know the parents and they got to know me. And that's one of the reasons why I stayed for 13 years. I had a visit from the education board and the district senior inspector, who I knew very well. And he said to me, as we're going around quietly, "You've been here a long time, haven't you?" And I knew what was going to come next and so on. However, when he walked out the gate, he said, "I don't blame you for staying," and drove off. However, when I'd been there for 13 years and I was now 40, it's time I did leave. And so I was looking around for a job. I got a ring from the head nun at St. James Primary School in Palmerston North. Would I apply for the job? And I declined and said no, I was thinking of going over to Fielding Way, to a state school there. And she rang again and asked me, would I apply for the job? And again I turned it down. On the third time, since the nuns had taught me, I thought, well, at least I can do is to go in and have afternoon tea with them. The idea was that the shortage of nuns had to start leaving the Catholic schools. And they wanted in St. James a principal who would be a lay principal, and the other two nuns were all elderly too, well into their 60s, so the three nuns at the school were going to retire. And that would mean that St. James would become one of the first schools in New Zealand with a complete lay staff. So I applied for the job, and a week later I was told that I had it. I'd been appointed there. So it was very interesting that the buildings were reasonably new, but the school was a long way behind what I had found in the state schools. They just weren't used to different rules. Teachers had to do playground duty and so on. That hadn't been happening in town. Many things, the records hadn't been kept up and so on.
You mean at that school playground duty wasn't occurring?
It hadn't. They were just past it and so on. And also, again, they hadn't been out to any refresher courses for many years.
So it was the same group of teachers who'd been teaching there for 20 or 30 years?
Yes.
Were the same teachers who taught you?
No. None of those, no. It was quite different when I went there. However, having had 20 years in the state schools, it didn't take much for me to get it up where it should be, and so on.
So you had new teachers coming in from the state system?
Yes. But it was a new sort of thing. Some people, of course, wanted the nuns to stay, and they didn't want lay people to come there, but they soon realised that there was a fact of life, that the nuns just did not have the workers any longer to come. So the first hurdle was to accept that and get on with life, change the whole school round, actually. And then the next one was integration, which was a very big thing to come around the place. It didn't worry me because we had to elect, we had a PTA running the school till then, and they did all the fundraising and brought down buildings and so on that we needed from the Maris Brothers, which had closed. So they, we had extra buildings there. The parents built me and a staff room, because it wasn't, it was only a little staff room when the school opened for two sisters, and now we had a lot, and I always had a lot of parents helping in the school. That was part of it. The parents, if they wanted to, could walk down the driveway and help wherever they thought they had their strength. So with integration, of course, we had an election of school committees. Well, I'd had school committees in the country, so that meant nothing to me. It just changed, as simple as that. But it did mean, up till that stage, we had a lot of non-Catholic children as well as Catholic children. But from then on, we were only allowed to have 8% of our maximum role as non-Catholic children.
Okay. So what was the role of the school committees?
Very formal compared with the PTA that was running the place. We came, of course, under the Wong Education
Board. So you had a Parent Teachers Association,
yes,
that was running the school?
Yes, they were running it until integration, yes. Elected by the parents.
Okay, mm-hmm. And the so then the committee was, how does that relate to the PTA?
Well, the PTA in those days were fundraisers, that's what they became, and putting on social occasions to join the staff to the parents and get the parents to know one another. And we did a lot of that, whereas the school committee had a lot of rules that they had to follow, and they had to report both to the Wong Education Board and to the Education Department. Some returns had to go to them and so on. And for us, it meant, of course, that the supplies of artwork, art materials and so on, came from the Education Board to us, which we'd never had before, because we hadn't been part of the museum. But soon, it made it a lot easier for the schools when we were integrated. But it didn't help with the 8%, and not, because that could be three families. Could be the eight, we had about eight children, you see, on that 3% and what it was. Oh, 5%, I think, sorry. It wasn't many anyway, and we had a waiting list of about 50 non-Catholic children wanting to get in. And our role went up, and we acquired more rooms. The rooms, incidentally, had integration. The bishop had to provide, or the Catholic Education Board had to provide the extras, the rooms, the buildings and all that, and maintain them. That was part of the deal. But the teachers came out of the Wong Education Board. We were paid by them. So the parents kept on working, and our role, we had a maximum role, and I just forget what it was, 128, I think, and we had to lift it, ask the government to lift it again, and lift it again, and lift it again, until we got to 231. And we had to find buildings before, as the role went up, and so on. So at that stage, I was still teaching. And we had then, Tomorrow Schools arrived with the present boards of trustees came along.
And they replaced the committees?
The school committees, yes. And it was a big job. They did everything in the school. They ran the finance and so on, because the Wong Education Board, of course, folded up at that stage with that big change. And so our board of trustees had to do all that work.
So how did you find it working with a board of trustees? Was it a smooth transition from the committee?
It was, yes. Yeah, no trouble at all on that one.
Was it the same sort of people?
Yes. We had four parents' representatives and three of the bishop's representatives and a teacher's representative, and the principal was on the board. Mm. And, of course, we met monthly, as we had all the others and so on, went through it. But it came to the stage with 231, I was still teaching 30 to 35 children. So I went to the board, trustees, and I said to them, I can't go on any longer. I can't talk to the children, take the children. I can't talk to the parents. I can't talk to my staff. And I've got to be released. And so they raised 70,000 and brought another building down and asked the board to lift the... So the maximum role went up to 271, and that filled up. And we still had waiting lists of Catholics and non-Catholics.
That was a ceiling you had to get to to actually get yourself out of the teaching position.
It was, it was, yes.
Now, with the Board of Trustees, though, was this more a delegation of more responsibilities to the school?
Oh, yes. Oh yes, the school virtually did all the work now. As they say, the education of the Wanganui board had closed, and the department had virtually closed too. So yes, the school had to think of all the raising money and getting the government money and spending it and reporting back to the government where it had gone
and
to.
This and was
so
all
on.
Voluntary input by the trustees.
Yes.
And a big change in your role in the school administration. You have had to have been reporting to your board of trustees all of these minute sort of details.
Yes. And we still had inspectors, but they weren't called that in those days, and they would call round to the school and check that all was going well and so on. But it meant that I could sit in the office and run the school much easier than having to worry about 35 children who I was half neglecting by rushing one to the other and so on. So it was much easier that way.
Did you miss the teaching?
Yes, I wasn't an administrator. I missed the children. So if the staff had a problem or wanted something done, they'd say, "Will you take my children?" Well, I'd rush out of the office and take the children. And I also had in my office children working on the floor. If they were getting behind with their maths or they couldn't do their writing or something, I'd have all these children around there. I said, "Send them to me. They can, while I'm doing my work, they can do their work and I can help them and so on." But yes, some teachers, of course, enjoyed the administration. I didn't like the paperwork. Of course, in those days, we had to write policies on everything. So we spent hours and hours and hours.
Is that more than now or less than now?
I presume, well, they'd have to upgrade the policies regularly, of course, today.
Yes.
With changing.
But what about sort of teaching programs, specifying what you're going to be doing week by week?
I think they've got to do more now.
Yes.
The principals do, and the board does, than ever I had to do.
Yes.
We didn't have half the policies. So many other things have come in under safety and health and things like that.
Particularly heavy workloads now, don't they, principals?
I think so, yes. I think there's
from
more.
From what I read in the papers.
It is, there's more and more paperwork.
Yeah.
And monitoring and assessing the pupils, is that?
Yes, well, they've got to do a lot of that, of course, and report to the parents, and that's not easy.
And that is something that has grown, you think?
It's grown and become, with other teachers' aides. I mean, they've all got computers and so on, and iPads and all this in their classrooms, and the teacher's got to put it on theirs and send it in to the principal. The principal's got to okay it and face the board, and it's got to do it all. And it's very hard, I've always found, to report to parents. Very hard indeed, because they don't understand a lot of the professional terms that you might use for other teachers to read. So some of them enjoy it and want that, and others wouldn't want that. They really want to know where their child is at, not where they might be under this test or whether the first or last or whatever it is. They do like to know where their child is the best, whereas you don't always get that when you get a report. They're doing well or something like that. So that's one of the things that upset a lot of teachers, trying to get that across.
Yeah. And parents' attitudes changed as well? Are they sort of less, more outspoken perhaps than they were in the past?
Well, I've got to be careful, of course. I retired in 1992.
Yeah.
So I've been retired for a number of years now. So it probably changed quite a bit in those years and so on. But every parent wants to know exactly where their child is at and what you're doing about it.
But over your time, did you notice a change?
Oh, yes, definitely.
In what way?
But then we used to not only send a written report out, which you had to do anyway, I think once a year or twice a year, and we would interview them for quite some time.
With the child there or without?
Well, today the child will be there for a lot of it. Not in my day, it wasn't. And we had in Hokafitu, one poorer area, and the parents weren't inclined to come, so I would go down there and interview them in their houses.
That was Crewe Crescent.
That was Crewe Crescent area.
So you would go and see the parents?
I would go and see them.
Was that unusual?
Very unusual, I think.
And also, it would be in your own time, wouldn't it?
Oh, of course it would.
Because you wouldn't catch the parents during the working day.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
Above and beyond, isn't it?
It had to be after school. It got very, I mean, they knew me. And I can remember the first one I did, they said, "No, I wouldn't. Would you stay for tea?" And I could see the way they said it. They expected me to say, "No, I'm not staying here." And on the first one, I said, "I'm sorry, I can't. But I'll come tomorrow if it helps." They said, would you? Now, some of them had no furniture in those in the house, of course, and here they were. I said, I just want a simple tea, just don't too big or anything like that, please, I don't eat a lot. So I went to their houses and so on. In fact, our school to them was quite palatial. Particularly since then, they've got a very big administration block now that I opened, and it's under my name on the front. It is. The schools now are quite palatial, I think, to what I had and so on. The halls, we've got a beautiful hall down there that I opened after I left and so on. But
no swimming pools.
Oh, well, the swimming pool at St. James still goes. It's heated and it still works, yes.
Okay.
When I first went there, I had to look after it. They didn't have anybody looking after them those days. So I was...
But most primary schools had swimming pools.
They all had swimming pools, yes.
And so all the children would learn to swim by the time?
Yes, yes.
And a lot of that's disappeared now.
West End School, well, Bunnythorpe had a learner's pool. West End School had a big deep pool with a diving board there. But they also built, while I was there, a learner's pool next to it. It's been open to the public, I think, for some years now. A swimming club is at West End, I think, nowadays. Glenrua had a pool. I went out there a few years ago to celebrate its 100 years. It's one of the first schools, certainly in the country, that had its own pool. And that's been going, and those children did learn in those days.
Yes.
No, a lot of those people learned, and originally, of course, it was very cold water. It wasn't heated or anything like that. But yes, all the schools, but Hokavitu had a very good pool, and when we wanted our swimming sport, we'd go down and use their pool because it's bigger than ours. Of latter years, we used to go to the Lido and have our swimming sports there. But sadly, from what I hear, a lot of the schools can't afford to keep them open.
Because now the requirements are more with fencing and everything else.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned, though, with pupils from one small part of your area were from a less privileged background.
Yes.
A lot of the pupils in the Hokavitu area would be from the more privileged, maybe staff at Massey or Teachers College and so on.
Exactly.
Was that? Did you see that as an issue in the classrooms?
No, it wasn't a problem. It was interesting. We had a lot at Massey because they'd come to Massey for 3 years or something like that from South America or Asia or so on. So we had a lot of children from foreign countries. But we didn't have, in my day, we didn't have a lot of teachers' aides and so on. And so the parents came in. We had a lot of parents.
So they wouldn't speak English, some of the pupils?
No.
Okay.
But they still learned.
So the complex issues you would have then, a lot of children from different backgrounds, but also some relatively affluent and others, New Zealand, relatively low income, and so on.
Yes.
In terms of ability, family motivation towards education and so on, did that show through at all?
Well, it showed through to start with, particularly those that came from the depressed areas in New Zealand. But in 2 years' time, by the time they reached Standard 1 or year or whatever it is now, year 3, it is, they could do it. But some of them didn't have books in their home. You know, there was nothing there to start with. They couldn't write their name when they came and so on.
So how were they able to catch up then? Was it you through your contact with the parents?
Yes, and we had parents, and when these people came to go through the school, normally they'd stay at the school for 3 days and judge the school, and they decided they'd come on 3 Fridays. And the first Friday they came into our staff room and they said, "Who are all these people in here?" I said, "Oh, they're parents." "And what are they doing here?" I said, "Oh, they're helping sport and they're doing the banking and they're taking the children over there that English is a second language and they're doing this." And then next Friday they came and they said, "This is a different lot of parents. What are they doing?" I said, "Look, I don't really know what they're doing, but they're helping in the classrooms." And that's how we got round it. Nowadays, they've all got teacher's aides, which the school has to pay for, which is very, very difficult out of their grant.
Now, and schools do welcome parents coming in, but there's an issue of police checks, but also you've got so many two-income households that when you had parents coming in, they wouldn't be those in full-time jobs, presumably.
No.
So there'd be maybe the mothers who were at home and had time to come in.
That would be exactly correct, yes. And no police checks, of course, in those days.
Yes.
But, no, they volunteered to come because they could. and they became part of it. They helped at the library, they helped right throughout the school with sport and so on. They come and take the sport after school and look after the teams and so on with our staff and so on. We also used to go away for school camps. While I was in the state school, of course, I could go to numerous places owned by the Wagga Education Board. I couldn't do that when I went to St. James to start with, and we used to go up to Mission Bay to the Christian camp there for a week, and the mothers would come, not the fathers. But the fathers heard about it so much that when we had the next one, they came too. That was their holidays. They'd take their holidays and so on. And it got too expensive, so we used to go to the Boys' Brigade camp at Foxton. And again, the mixture of parents would be men and women who would come and run the camp, do all the work with the children for you. Mm-hmm. But now I think the swing has gone the other way. It's very hard to go to a camp that isn't organised by the camp to provide the food and so on with you, because they just can't get the parents.
Barry, did you have any special hobbies outside of school through all those years, or did you?
Well, I played tennis for many
years.
Earlier on, and then while I was at Glenruach, of course, I played indoor bowls and table tennis and everything there. But when I came back to St. James, no, they'd all gone. I didn't have the time to run the school and so on.
Yeah.
When I first went, the first day I took over, I was the principal. I was also head of religion in the school. I was the groundsman. I was the clerical assistant.
Yeah.
I was the baths keeper. I had about 5 roles to start with.
Did you have time to have a sleep and a meal sometime?
I always went to school at 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
And you often had meetings after school and at night.
Indeed, yeah.
Yes.
And retirement, did you have a choice when to retire, or was there compulsory retirement?
You must retire. No, you need to retire after 40 years to get superannuation.
So you mean you had to work for 40 years to get the...
Yes.
Is that to get the maximum superannuation?
It's the maximum.
Otherwise,
they just give you what you put in. But if you're there for 40 years, of course, they matched it. And so everyone kept going until that 40 years.
And then, but could you stay on? I know at one stage there was compulsory retirement at 60.
Yeah, but not in Lockhart. No, you could stay on if you wanted to. But I was exhausted. I really had it.
Absolutely.
At that time. But the Wagga Education Board actually gave me a year off. And I went overseas in South Africa and travelled all around for a year. Drove around all over Europe and so on. And that helped.
Was that a sort of paid sabbatical or just...
No, I had to do all the padding, but they just gave me the time off and so on. So it was marvellous. I could get around those countries that you wouldn't want to go to
nowadays. Well, I think that at least keep your salary going.
It gave me that break in the middle that I could. I wanted to come back. I was dying to get back to teach and so on at the end. I had enough after a year. So you can still do that, but you've got to go to your own board of trustees for permission nowadays. The hours that the boards put in is just getting out of order. But it's the paperwork. You had to do a lot of... All these policies, for example, that we had to write. And we'd spend hours and hours and hours writing these policies. And the parents would come along with their children. And I said, now here's the policies. And all I got back was, we don't want to read those. We've checked up on you. We're coming here. And I felt like so... we have spent hours doing these policies, but the government have to have them. Yeah. And there's far more now. Health and safety comes in every minute now.
So when you had policies, there's something written up on paper. Did they actually guide your daily activities, or was it just, well, that's done now and we'll just get on with our teaching?
That's what it was. You just wrote them as fast as you could and put them in so that when they were inspected, they were all there sitting on your desk. And if they weren't there, you were asked, why aren't you writing, where are these policies?
So were there sort of policy templates that you could, we've got these these options A, B and C, which should we take? Or you had to do them all from scratch?
Well, no, we did have a little help from the Wagga Education Board, and people there wrote a sample policy, but you really had to put it for your school, which could be different to some other school.
I remember asking teachers that I know, who reads all this? And they said, we have no idea, but it's all written down.
It's all written down.
Yeah.
You, coming back to your earlier days, and you spoke of your musical education. Have you been able to maintain that throughout performance or in any way?
Well, when I went to teachers' college, of course, I didn't have a piano, so that was the end of that. I was only I could have gone for ATTCL the next year if I'd stayed here. But however, I went there, and when I came back, I really didn't have time. And my sister Cecily had left anyway. She'd gone to Wellington or something or other. So I really didn't have the time. But I could play all right, which I did for school concerts and everything like that.
You're also the music master.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, too right. And when I lived in the country, I had a very big old house, and the Te Kawa Teachers Association would have progressive dinners and so on at the end of the year, or somebody was leaving or something. But they always ended up at my house, because they wanted the piano played, and they all seemed well, and so on. And I got the same when I went into St. James School. If there was anything on, well, they wanted to sing.
Yeah. Now, you said you were playing for concerts and things. Now, in schools, there's a lot of emphasis in performance and confidence and so on. Was that... did you have drama and so on?
We had children, we had a speech contest and so within the school, and we went through all the rules and how they could do it and so on. And we got outside people from the speech association to come and judge it and so on. That was just in that line. Many times we had a concert in the school at the end of the year, and the children ran it, the whole thing. They decided all the teacher had to do was the corner and listen and watch and so on. There was a lot of that went on, that it was over to the children. If you want it, well, you do it for us and so on. But certainly speech was a very big one, and still is in the school. St. James is now 60 years old this year. And 30 years ago, I introduced the whānau to the school and the kapaka group. 30 years ago, we started that and so on. And they do that. Always built up now, far better than we started off with. Far built and used on many occasions. They do all the competitions in town with that and so on. And we also had, to celebrate our 30 years, I got the children together and I said, a lot of the people of the original school are still alive. The principal and first year teachers were still alive. The bishop was there. The chaplains of the school were there. And we put on a thing, "This is your life." And the children worked it out, what they did. And we had it held in the cathedral. And the children got up and introduced whoever it was. And "This is your life." And because it was the Olympics year, we gave them a gold medal for that. But the children did all of that.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.